Good evening. Coming to you from New Heavensland, Pennsylvania, this is Doubting Dogma, and I just made Riz's choke on her soda. Sorry. I'm your host, Molly Unmormon, and I've still managed to hide from the reindoctrination team. With me, as always, is my friend and co-host, she who has never been brainwashed into religiosity, the lovely Riz McCool.
I just want to point out that that's the second thing I almost choked on today, and this was infinitely less fun, so nowhere to go but up.
I did not mean to make carbonation almost come out your nose. I apologize.
Well, the way you tell the Mormon stories, I can't help it, so I expect that to be the first of many. Miss Molly.
I do have that talent. I've made my husband almost choke on coffee. I don't know how many times.
There you go. But it's the caffeine. It's the caffeine.
Probably it is the devil. We talked about that when I visited on your other show there.
Yeah, but that other show that nobody knows about. So we have guests today, don't we?
Yes, we do. Joining us here in studio is Sean.
Wait a minute, this doesn't seem my normal Sunday scolding. Where's the master?
Oh, we'll find him. We'll find him.
And joining us across the interwebs is Tony. Welcome, Tony.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
You're quite welcome.
Oh, that's a golden radio voice. He might convert me.
Oh, no, no, no. I haven't given you my professional radio voice that I've been paid to use before. Just hold on. I might bring that in later.
Oh, look who's big-shotting now. Used to just be the guy on the show who would do the geek things, and now he's trying to big-league me. I see. It's cool.
So, Sean, you want to tell us just a little bit about yourself and your background so we know where you're coming from?
I was born a poor black child.
Was it in West Philadelphia?
I was born and raised Catholic. Catholic family, grandfather's a deacon, uncle's a deacon, every other person's a deacon, basically. Grew up Catholic, then I realized, not my thing. Literally tried almost every other religion. Tried Buddhism. I technically made a cult in high school. That was
nice.
I know, it didn't last. Got converted as a born-again Christian. Their stories there. Tried Mormonism. Their stories there.
And as now, there always are.
Always
and now
stories.
I'm just floating. Yeah.
Fantastic.
All right. And Tony, if you want to give us just a little background about yourself as well.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Well, I was born into a Lutheran family. I grew up a Lutheran, was a Lutheran my entire life. I went to a Lutheran college for my first semester of college where I suddenly realized, like, oh, this is kind of crazy and stupid and I don't want to go to this college anymore. So then I left and I went to UW College, University of Wisconsin College, and I still am a Christian, but I'm not a Lutheran anymore. I did belong to the Wells Synod, which once they came out publicly against Obama's equal marriage stuff that happened a couple years ago, I was like, oh yeah, no, I don't want any part of the Synod at all if that's how public they're going to come out against gay marriage. And now I am a Methodist, so.
All right. So, okay. Sorry. Well, we pretty much got an interesting variety here. I think we're going to have some interesting different perspectives. So, damn thing. Screw it. I'm going solo. Now, Molly, before we get into the discussion, you were telling us a story, and I am fascinated by this story. We've all seen it on South Park, but why don't you take us a little further into the story of Book of Mormon? We last left off when the convicted con man, Joseph Smith, found, supposedly, plates in the yard that he was digging for.
Well, they weren't in the yard. They weren't there at the farm. They weren't too far away, but I don't remember exactly how far. They were on the Hill Cumorah there in close to Palmyra, New York, where he was living. And to this day, every year, the Mormons have the Hill Cumorah pageant where they, I guess, reenact Book of Mormon stories in costume or something. I've never been to
Mormon it. Cosplay? It,
yes.
I have to go to this.
The whitest event you will ever see.
True story.
No. A Donald Trump rally would be a little bit whiter.
No, that's a little more orange, but yeah.
Okay, so who gets to play Nephi? Like, who dresses up in blackface?
No, Nephi's people were exceedingly fair, remember?
Oh, that's right. Were they of curious workmanship?
Sometimes.
Oh, I bet. See, you can't even tell this story without laughing.
No, but okay. So he went up to the Hill Cumorah, and he had been going back every year on the same day at the instructions of the Angel Moroni in order to, I guess, oogle the plates and then, like, put it back and then go back home. And then he was finally told, no, this is the year, now go get him. So he went up and got him, and even though no one in the community believed him.
Imagine that.
As I make wrist choke on her soda again.
Told you.
Even though nobody believed him, you know, they're all laying in wait for him so they can steal the gold plates, because you're thinking, well, these are farmers in upstate New York in 1820s New York, and there's not a lot of money going around. They're not wealthy. So you hear, okay, I'm getting this book made of solid gold. And yeah, everyone's going to want to show up so they can go and melt it down and, you know, use some bullion for trading or whatever. So,
sure.
So on his way back, he was assaulted a couple times. He had to fight him off, as the story goes. And I don't know if it was in a trunk or a bag or whatever, but he, like, actually swung it at people. And so he was beating people off with the blades because they were heavy. So,
oh, I bet he was beating people off to escape. Well, Joe, nobody rides for free.
So then he gets back, and, you know, no one can see them because he is under direction that these are sacred and no one's allowed because, I don't know, it'll melt their face off or something. Think Indiana Jones. But
and it was written in modified Egyptian, right?
Reformed Egyptian.
Reformed so, Egyptian.
Yes. So. Yes. Which is funny because, and I know Noah and them brought this up, you know, because in the beginning of the Book of Mormon, he says, and this is written in the language of my people, but his people were from Jerusalem, so you'd think they spoke Hebrew, maybe, or
Joseph
something.
Didn't pass geology. Or geography.
Actually, Joseph didn't have beyond a third grade education, actually. But
even
at
better.
At the time, that wasn't uncommon because, you know, they'd go to school for a couple years, and then once they were old enough, they had to help on the farm.
And it came to pass.
Yes. And funny story about that, Mark Twain actually said, if you were to take, and it came to pass, out of the Book of Mormon, it would reduce it to a pamphlet. So, yes, there are jokes about that even within the church.
So, if they Jeffersonianed the Book of Mormon, we could get this all done in a weekend.
And it came to pass, and that would be it.
All right, that's fantastic. Now, Sean, you said you were a Reformed Mormon, right? Or at least had dabbled?
Yes, I did Mormonism for about a year.
Did you go through with the whole baptism and everything, or just earned the status as the investigator, air quotes there?
I earned the status.
Ooh, okay. Big
so
shot.
I didn't get quite baptized. I was close.
Only half baptized? No, I'm just kidding.
Just a little dabble. But a lot of stuff strayed me from finally crossing that path. One of the things is I'm poor, as many of us are.
And just couldn't take the 10%, could you?
No, I didn't want to give 10%, but it's also the fact that what they told me, they would prey on my profession. So, at least with this one, after I get baptized, the congregation would pray over me on what position I should do within their church.
Yes.
And, for example, I hate kids. Wouldn't that suck if somehow God had told them that I should watch over the little ones? That would end horribly in a day.
And this almost always happens in the church because, and their excuse is, well, excuse or reasoning is, you are being called to something that you are weak at so you can grow. And so my mom was actually just in the primary presidency, so she was one of the top sisters because the women are in charge of the kids. That's just how it is. Mm-hmm. So she was in charge of the primary program, which is children ages 3 to 12. So, yeah. And she thought, oh, I can't do this. This is too much responsibility because I'm the head person and all this stuff. And, you know, they say, this is what you're called to because God knows that's what you're weak at. And then, so then you grow and it's a forced learning.
But God won't talk to you directly. No, he'll talk to us in a private room as we all gather with each other after eating a nice fast food meal. And then, you know, God will decide your fate.
Yeah, and it was always funny because, you know, the bishopric would come to you and say, we have this calling for you. We would like you to serve as whatever. And the last calling that I held in the church was one of the den leaders for the Weeblos, the 10-year-old Boy Scouts. Or, well, Cub Scouts, technically. And actually, that was so much fun.
Really?
Oh, I so enjoyed working with those boys. But the funny thing was, while I was there every week for our Cub Scout meeting, I wasn't going to church because I just didn't feel comfortable. But I loved those boys. They were so much fun. And getting to go and do the little science projects and the art projects and whatever to get them the requirements they needed in order to earn their Arrow of Light, because these were the oldest boys, and the Arrow of Light is the last thing they get before they move on to Boy Scouts.
All right.
And working with them to get that was just such a fulfilling experience. But, I mean, it's scouting. What's that got to do with the church? But
sure.
God is all up in the Boy Scouts of America, if you haven't read any news articles.
Well, they got to find more golden plates.
Yeah. And, which one of these boys is the one that Eli borrowed to share with Andrew? Just curious. Now, Tony, I got sorry to kind of...
in the feet.
Indeed. You've never seen them, have you? Tony, you came from a different sect, so to speak, of Christianity, which was, you said it started with Lutheran, and you said that you went to one semester at a Lutheran college, but it was too much for you. I don't think any of us here have experience with Lutherans, so can you kind of elaborate on that a little bit?
I suppose I can. Well, basically, how Lutheranism started is that Martin Luther was a Catholic, and he would go, and he was a monk, and he would go and he would read the Bible passages, and like a lot of people back in the day didn't read the Bible because they didn't know how to read, so unless you were a monk, you really didn't know how to read that well.
Mm-hmm.
So they would just believe, you know, the passages that the priests would tell them, and they would be like, okay, yeah, no, this all seems smart. This all seems to work right. Yeah, I get what you're going for here. And Martin Luther, upon reading the Bible, he was like, oh, well, this is a little bit different than how the Catholics are preaching this to be. That's a little weird. And long story short, he basically got excommunicated by the Catholic Church, and he was the founder of Lutheranism, which... I mean, it's like every Christian religion. There are just subtle differences here and there between it and every other form of Christianity, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why the Christian college was so weird for me is because they still had separate buildings entirely for the male and female students. And if you were going to visit a, like, if I wanted to go visit a female student in her dorm room, I had to do it in these very select hours of the day. And I had to sign a guest book with the room number that I was going to be in. And we had to leave the door open at all times while we were there. And they just had these ridiculous ways of controlling the students when we were attending this school to become pastors and teachers for that religion. Hmm. And it just seemed very odd to me that they would try to control us that much when we are supposed to be the leaders and they should be trusting us to be those leaders.
I see. And how many different rooms were you in when the door had to be open? I mean, I'm sure that became a problem almost immediately.
Well, like, it just basically the workaround everybody did to go around those rules were like, oh, well, we're all going to go hang out in this public area of the college then so that we can be here as long as we want, whenever we want anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. So
sign a waiver for Jesus.
Yep.
So was anyone else here religiously educated post high school?
No, but my sister actually went to BYU.
Okay.
So, and they have the honor code like that you have to sign, but it goes beyond just in the dorms. There are only certain apartments, if you're living off campus, that you're allowed to stay at, because some of these apartments don't have a good reputation, so you're not allowed to stay there. And there was a news article at least a couple years back, where a girl from BYU was raped, and the church ethics committee with the college was going to kick her out for her immoral act or whatever, and all this kind of stuff. And the misogyny in the church is just horrible. And because you had to dress certain ways, like all the nitpicky little Mormon rules you had to follow, or else you could get kicked out of college.
Wasn't it a couple of years back when a basketball player got suspended for premarital sex or something like that?
I'm not sure.
Okay, I could swear I've heard that, but yeah, that's a thing apparently. So
he would have been if that was with BYU. He would have been.
Wow. I maybe it's because I've never been invested in religion, but I cannot imagine anyone having that much control over your life. Nor can I imagine being cool with it. I mean, I can understand being raised in it and that just being the default, like yours was. But, you know, coming from a secular place and then going into something like that and having to sign purity pledges, I'm pretty sure I would have said, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, and even in the Army, you had more freedom than that. I mean, if you were living in the barracks there when you were permanent party, you would have to, like, if you were visiting someone else's barracks, yeah, you'd have to sign in at the CQ and leave, but before the, 11, because they had a curfew.
Yeah.
I mean, well, when you've got PT at 6 in the morning, you know, they've got that kind of stuff. But even that, it doesn't have, well, you can't do this and you can't do this. And I mean, when your drill sergeant tells you that prisoners have more rights than you, and you look at Army life compared to BYU life, and you have more rights in Army life than that, I mean, what's that saying?
Yeah, you're not even getting shot at BYU, necessarily. So the biggest reason that we decided to have this episode is both Sean and Tony have talked to me about some of their reservations and some of the difficulties they might have had coming from the religious background and possibly in regards to me. Neither one of them have been unsupportive or anything, but I know there was that indication that it was a different way to process and also a different way to process the things that we say on our show. So once again, I'll start with Sean. why don't we start with you and tell me a little bit more about that. Like, you know, the reason you wanted to have this show in the first place, and then maybe something we can all answer from our different perspective.
For me, it started on a Facebook conversation that I believe Tony brought you in, and then you tagged me in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a concurring thought how I was on a different show of yours, briefly talking about religion on one of my episodes. But I feel like between me and you, Molly and Tony, that there can be much more insight
mm-hmm.
from someone who is an ex-Mormon, someone who is observing religion from a far distance, very far distance. Now, I don't know much about Tony yet, but he seems very into his faith. And me, I'm a guy who's into my faith, but right now I'm just wayfaring.
Okay.
But that's why I wanted to do this podcast episode.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, it's if you got a question, I'll be more than happy to ask.
All right. Then, Tony, I think maybe we should start with you, because we had a private conversation, and feel free to leave any of it out that you want, but can you sort of rephrase it in a way that maybe the entire group can answer on, and feel free to elaborate your background into it a little bit, if you don't mind?
Okay, are you referring to the conversation that we had where I basically told you that, like, I've never known a trans person before?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, basically, it was just that, you know, you're the very first person that I know personally mm-hmm. who is trans. And, you know, I've never really been able to think about how they go through the struggles that they go through, how I can't really put myself in your shoes. I can try, but, you know, I will never be able to truly know what you go through. You know, it's not my place to tell you if, like, that's a sin or not. That's not, I don't care. But, you know, you have really opened my eyes on, like, what the struggles are and the good and the bad for, you know, what it's like to be a trans person in the United States. And with so many people people in the United States that claim to be Christians and all they do is persecute people. And that's, like, I've seen so many arguments on Facebook about religion where people completely bash Christianity and all Christians in general. And it just made me realize that, well, like, you haven't really had a good example of, like, what a Christian can be. And I'm not trying to build myself up, but I would like some kind of input on something that can reach people's ears where, like, no, like, Christians are not all persecution. Christians do not all Christians hate gay people. They're trans people. Like, I want to be an example of, like, no, you can talk to me about this and I can talk to you about it as well. And we can have an intelligent discussion about it and show that, no, like, we can be kind to each other despite our vast differences.
Okay. Molly, since your experience is more being raised in that kind of thing, I know you said you weren't exposed to a lot of these ideas at all. So how are you dealing with that now, especially since you're sitting next to a trans person in short shorts?
And your legs look fabulous, honey.
Of course they do.
Brissy
Monster don't play.
Well, I remember growing up, and I think it was Prop 8 in California, the yep. anti-gay marriage bill,
mm-hmm.
and them talking about it at church. And, I mean, even though it didn't affect us in Colorado, it was a big hot button topic because of what it was. And, I mean, even then, like, I don't know. I don't even remember thinking, oh, well, gays are so horrible. They're all just these wretched, awful people. I didn't even have an opinion on it. I was just like, oh, I've been told that's bad, so I guess, okay.
And, of course, the Mormon Church spent a lot of money.
Hugely anti-gay gay.
Well, not just that, but they actually paid a lot of money in Prop 8. I remember that.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I've told you this before. My dad and I had a discussion after the Supreme Court made its ruling.
Mm-hmm.
And he had said, you know, he's one of these that's having the feeling that the Supreme Court is ruling from the bench, that they're making laws. And he's saying, well, they don't have the right to make laws, because I had voiced how I didn't like his nomination pick of Ted Cruz because Ted Cruz stood up with that stupid whore from Kentucky that I absolutely hate because she refused to issue marriage licenses. And I was like, no, it's the law now. And where I work, with all the every time a Fourth Amendment ruling comes up, that changes the way I can do my job because of search and seizure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand that, yeah, the laws change due to the rulings on the bench. And it's not them making the laws. It is them setting a precedent on how the current laws can be enforced. And no, we were wrong. That is unconstitutional. You can't do that. So you have to modify and go from there. We had to play it by ear a lot because there are so many Fourth Amendment things that go up. And so I'm sitting there, well, it's not them ruling from the bench. They're not making laws. They ruled on laws and struck it down, and therefore it became the law of the land. And that's the way it works.
Or, you know? Or what we used to call it, governing.
Yeah. Yeah. Checks and balances.
Yeah.
And for my dad, who is such a constitutional nerd, I still just don't understand how he doesn't get that that's how it works. But
yeah, I, like I said, the one time I was around him, I felt like there was about to be a stake through my heart. So, Sean, I'm going to ask you first, and then Tony, same question. Being that you're at some level with religion and some level with having your faith, how do you bridge that? How do you bridge what the, and, you know, as Tony was saying, it's not all religious people, and neither of us are implying that. But how do you bridge that dissonance where the body, the church itself, comes out on all these things and spends money and time and people trying to influence opinions and laws while, you know, so I'm assuming both of you are not anti-gay or anti-trans, otherwise I don't think you'd be talking to me, but how do you bridge that gap and, you know, keep the faith and separate yourself from the opinions of the overall body?
With me, it's, I was raised, luckily, by a family who, although some were very hardcore in their beliefs, some are more free with their opinions and viewpoints due to other people in their family. I have an aunt who's openly gay. My uncle is a deacon in North Carolina. Now, his wife prays for my aunt every day that she finds a good husband, even though she's married. But my uncle supports her. He may not fully agree with his religious beliefs, but he supports her. And I've learned from good people like that, for the most part, that it isn't all about what some of the higher-ups have said. So, a good example. There's a church in Morgantown, Pennsylvania, called the Morgantown Community Church. It's a horrible place, should burn. So there was a moment where, while I'm still developing in the Christian non-denomination faith, what is everyone's viewpoints on gay people? Because a few years ago, it was still a controversial thing before it was widespread and how open it is as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
There was a member in our church. He was a teenager. He had to be 15 years old. He was gay. You could tell, even just by the way he was speaking, it was stereotypical gay.
Sure.
Like the very lispy thing. But he was one of the nicest people. One Sunday I came in. and they do a sermon about forgiving yourself, letting yourself go. There's always time for change. And I see them look at this boy, and he is crying. And his mom, who isn't accepted of who he is, the pastor, the youth leaders and everything, surrounded him and prayed over him. They were trying to be nice, but to me it was coming off, we gotta pray the gay away. Mm-hmm. And he's crying. They are beating into his head that he is wrong for being who he is. When I was in high school, I made my cult religion because the Bible has a lot of things set in stone, but it's also very open to interpretation. I am openly pansexual.
Cheers.
Yes. Just not on Facebook because there's family.
Understood.
But I honestly believe God created us in God's image. God loves all his children. So because of that, God also created gay people, transgender people, people who may not be comfortable with how they are raised and want to be something else. It's still in God's plan. I don't think God planned on them being openly persecuted by church members who are supposed to claim, hey, we love everyone in God's image, but if you're gay, we're going to help pray the gay away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't accept this. And as a person of faith, I accept everyone. Like, if you're gay, if you're trans, good. Do you believe in God and Jesus? That's a bonus. That's great. Are you an asshole? No? Awesome! Then, hey, come stay at the night. That's my viewpoint.
All right. Oh, I've already gotten a couple propositions tonight, but if you insist. Tony, you were saying that was kind of a deciding factor for you, was the church's opinion, or at least the church you were in at the time, their opinion on marriage equality. So as someone who reached out to me personally about that, how do you bridge that gap with that dissonance? Sort of the same question I asked Sean.
Okay. First of all, I want to say, Sean, I loved every single thing that you just said. Nice job, brother.
Thank you. I attempt to try.
Well, basically, I decided long ago that I was going to support gay people and that entire movement because there's a separation of church and state, and our founding fathers put that in there for a reason. So I decided, even before I was of age to vote, that I would not base my vote on my faith. I would base my vote on the actual issues at hand. And if our Constitution states that all men are created equal, and some of those men are not allowed to marry the people they love because they're gay, then all men are not equal. So anybody that does not support marriage equality, I was not going to support that candidate. And moving beyond that, when I took a closer look at scripture with my faith and reading the Bible, it's very readily apparent, and you can go look this up yourself, like just with a quick Google search, the amount of Bible verses that talk about divorce are immensely more numerable than the number of Bible verses that talk about gay people.
Yes.
So if gay marriage is supposed to be this enormous deal, then why didn't it make God's top 10 commandments list?
Because he was telling everybody to be nice to their mom and dad.
Yeah, whether or not they deserve it.
I mean, it just comes across as so absurd to me that all these politicians are against gay marriage when it doesn't hurt you personally, so I don't know why you're so invested in it, number one. But number two, like, who does it honestly hurt in the end? Like, basically nobody. It doesn't hurt anyone, so I don't see why it's this big, horrible thing. And when I'm living in a country where everybody's supposed to be equal, that pisses me off.
Cheers. And I feel I should comment, especially because of a recent episode of Overtime on Real Time with Bill Maher and that motherfucker Milo, whatever his name is.
Fuck and that asshole.
Yeah, and I wrote about this, and I plan on writing about it more, that Milo was on there saying, you know, trans women are actually just men who are confused about their sexual identity, and they have a psychotic disorder, and, you know, I'm not against them having rights, but I think women and children need to be protected from people like that. And this is a place where I can sort of separate myself from one of the more prominent atheists, because Bill Maher looked at him and said, "That's not unreasonable." And I went, "Fuck you." And fortunately, Larry Wilmore was there to tell them to go fuck themselves. But it's that's the attitude I've had to deal with, especially from religious people. If they're not set against denying who I am altogether, it's, oh, well, you have the right to do whatever you want, but we need to make sure women and children are protected. And Milo cited some bullshit statistic that transgender people are proportionately more involved in sex crimes, which if we are, it's as the victim of them, because we are targeted and fetishized.
Trans women especially. And I had a conversation about this at work with one of my coworkers, because he was falling on the side of North Carolina as far as the bathroom bill goes. And I was like, no, it's a load of bull. I was like, who cares where they pee? You know, they're not going in there to molest your kid. They're going in there to relieve themselves like everybody else in that bathroom. And a law like that is not going to stop a sexual predator from going in there. They're going to go in there anyways, whether there's a law or not, because there's already a law not to go and molest their little kids
or
anybody, really.
And I was just in a state earlier today, and I've lived in a state where most places have gender-neutral restrooms, and you might be amazed to hear this, but I have molested zero people in any of these restrooms.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a Christmas miracle.
I'm so disappointed.
Yeah. I really should get my batting average up. Maybe I'll talk to Eli at ReasonCon about that. But
no, hang on. Because I'm tailing off what Tony said.
Okay, go ahead.
One, people who made that comment on Bill Maher, they kind of have a history of being caught like years down the line for a scandal involving other men. Mm-hmm. I'm just throwing that out there. But second, and Tony, you could quote me if I'm a bit wrong on this.
Okay.
I believe that there's a story in the Bible where Jesus, you know, the guy who tends to forgive people, had dinner with a prostitute and a tax collector who at that time were seen as some of the scum of the earth. And the point of having that meal is saying, hey, we're all equal, including those who people can see as taboo kind of things. Yep. We are to forgive each other. We are to be one with them, be equal with them. Now, I don't remember anything afterwards where he says, unless you're gay or you're transgendered or you think differently, no, then you could go fuck yourself. I don't think he ever said that after having dinner with
Although
them.
I would read the fuck out of the Jesus go fuck yourself Bible. I'm just saying.
Narrated by Samuel L. Jackson.
Yes.
Oh, that audiobook would sell like hotcakes.
Yeah, I think there's some people who use the Bible to hate people who need to be told to go fuck themselves. So, once again, sort of pivoting to the religious among us here. And
go
ahead.
Yeah, before we continue, I forgot to say something earlier about the gay marriage. The
preceding podcast was recorded and all copyright is reserved. The music was performed by Riss McCool, and I did have my permission.